Blog Talk Radio.
About your dog and you, Character Capital Area Guide Dog Users Inc. And the show is named About Your Dog and You, a show about blind persons that decide to get them a guide dog that gives them confidence, independence, and the opportunity to explore all the opportunities that this world has to offer to all persons, including blind people. So, this again is Tag You, About Your Dog and You, and I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. We still pay homage to one of our founders, Brother Charlie Crawford, and we can never replace him. But we haven't yet had anyone to be the co-host. We still have a black cover over his microphone. So sometime this year we are going to we're interviewing and reaching out and seeing who we can bring on to be the co-host. But until then, Brother Charlie, you're still with us in spirit. Greetings, Miss Renee. How are you doing today? Which Miss Renee is our hostess with the mostest. She plays a lot of roles. She's our producer, engineer, and announcer. So greetings to you, Miss Renee, and how are you doing today?
I'm looking for that $15 minimum wage. So we need to talk.
$15 for each of those jobs. We'll put that on the agenda at the staff meeting, okay? we'll talk about that at the staff meeting.
They've heard you say that now. They know I do three jobs. I should be paid $15 for each job.
We will discuss that at the staff meeting. We'd be remiss to not least mention what's going on with the Senate and the trial and our former president and all that. But, you know, as I get older, I'm narrowing my interest. And for me now, I see things through the lens of what affects persons with disability, blind persons, and people that have guide dogs or service animals. And if it doesn't affect those things, I don't give a lot of attention to it. So I don't think that's right now what's going to happen to the president going to affect a whole lot about those communities. So we won't have to discuss that. But I will say this, that's affect me. This is Black History Month, and I am black, so let's make some history. Ms. Renee, give us the lineup for today. Give us that lineup for today.
I will. Well, we always begin with stop dogging us around, the good, the bad, and ugly of using a guide dog. And when you call the Corona home, the phone greeting sounds like the clearinghouse for an entire group of activists. But instead, it's the one woman show that is Jane Corona. And most intriguing are the Braille Revival League and the ACB, American Council of the Blind. So we will learn about that and so much more in the next hour. And in our second half, we peer into Charlie's Corner. So back over to you, Reverend Radio Ray.
All right. You know, I like to start the show, and me and Charlie used to have a whole lot of back and forth banter about stop dogging us around, the good, the bad, the ugly, or using a guide dog. And I still would say when you write down on the good ledger, the bad ledger, and the ugly ledger, still the good come up better. Because I know Reverend Ray was not using a guide dog. He might be maybe 15 pounds heavier. He might not be able to run up at least three flights of steps. he wouldn't be able to probably walk for more than 30, 40, 50 minutes. So I know that's good for Reverend Ray. But but some information I would like to give out is about me and Brother Charlie was working on that has moving right along through the pipes of the system of that song. When those who baby boomers remember, I'm Just a Bill up on Capitol Hill. So we do have the service animal protection bill, and I know if Charlie was still living, he'd be kicking about that because he definitely would want to be named a guide dog. So I didn't have the force of him to force that. So right now we have to take what we can get. And so we had the hearing in the House of Delegates in Maryland State. Now we're going to have it in the Senate bill is 605. The HB bill was 234. So the Senate bill is 607, and that hearing that is introduced by Michael Jackson, of all people. That's the senator's name from Maryland and state senate, and that's going to be happening this Wednesday, the 17th, at 1 o'clock. And we're going to send that information out again. And they say up to 50 people can be on the Zoom, of course, and they can testify and send in written information. So we're looking forward to that. It shouldn't be a problem with the bill, but we're going to keep you up on that. So that is the Stop Dogging Me Around. So, Ms. Renee, now let's have our special guest be introduced again formally, please.
Okay. Well, our guest is Jane Corona. She is an activist who is blind, and she will introduce and share information important to the blind community. And we want to welcome her.
Good afternoon, Ms. Jane. How you doing, ma'am?
Good afternoon, Reverend Ray. How are you?
I am great. A couple of disclaimers in case I seem too familiar with Ms. Jane is that we are both graduates and attended Maryland School for the Blind, and you know I have a number of Maryland School for the Blind mates on our radio show, and I don't make excuses for it. You know, you use your friends as you can find them. And so I appreciate Jane coming on, being a guest, and I am so proud of her and what she have accomplished and how she have stayed involved into our community. Really, really am. So, Jane, since we know that you're already a friend of the blind community and a contributor, and now you made your maiden voyage on CAGDU, we will treat you from this point on like a family member, and you know how they get treated. So anyway, be kind enough to share with us, Jane, you know, where I hate to say where you're from and all of that, but give us some background history, because, you know, a lot of times now with this Zoom in, and you can ask Alexa just about anything, you know, what occupation, what kind of occupation, all that. So tell us some human stuff about you, like where you were born, did you have a family, or did somebody sell you, or did you get thrown in a hole at Joseph in the Bible, you know, or something like that, just where you hailed from. We'll appreciate that.
Well, I'm a Marylander. I'm born in PG County Hospital. And lived in Maryland for most of my life, except for 9 months when I was stupid and went down to Georgia. Lord of mercy. I came right back home. Went to, as Ray said, Maryland School for the Blind from 1960 to 1972. And went to Salisbury, well, it was a college then, Salisbury State College on the Eastern Shore. And we ate a lot of chicken because Purdue was big down there, you know. then I got a job. Most of my family, my mother's side of the family, worked for the federal government. So it was natural for me to get a job at the federal government at the VA. And then I wasn't happy with that after a while. So the last 10 years of my working life, I worked at the Library of Congress and got my dream job. So, and now I'm retired. I live in Leisure World. And I tell people that I bought my dog an apartment because when I got my new dog, I knew that where I was living, since I wasn't going downtown to work anymore, I needed a place where I could have more work for my dog. So I bought my dog an apartment in Leisure World so that we would have some work to do. Of course, then COVID hit, and we're not going anywhere anyway. So that's pretty much me. And I'm doing a lot of volunteer work as in various organizations. So,
well, let's back up a little bit. Now, as you, how did you lose your sight, or was you born blind?
I was pretty much born blind. I have retinopathy of prematurity. And so I was 2 months premature, and I had a twin sister who...
Whoa.
What?
Now, you the fifth guest that we had that been a twin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess there weren't enough
resources to go around or something, and she didn't survive like I... She wasn't a fighter like I am. So, no, we were twins. Of course, and then when I got married, my husband was a twin, and my mother was a twin, so we didn't dare have kids.
My.
So, no.
Jane, did you know Charlie Crocker was a twin?
I know Charlie was a twin. That's true. Yeah.
Charlie was a twin. Yeah. We did this
Carl Stanley was a twin.
Oh, Claire's a twin too?
Yeah.
Wow.
Her sister named Kate. We talked more about Kate than we did Carl.
Okay.
So Jane,
let me
ask you this. We coming up on the time, Ms. Renee? Let me ask you this then. Did you have other siblings?
I have, aside from my sister who didn't fight enough and she didn't survive, I have a brother who's 9 years older than me, and he's right now living in Florida. He's married, and they have one son who lives in Hawaii and has a daughter. So that side of the family is prospering. My brother's a very useful person to have because he's a woodworker. And every time I need a new thing made of wood, I need a center to put all my mail in, or I need a new knitting loom made, or whatever, I call my brother. And I say, guess what I think I need for you to make for me. So he's very useful to have around. So,
Jane, let me ask you this. Being blind, what was the relationship with your mother and father in having a blind child? So many times, we have. So how did they contribute or retard your development?
I think... After they got over the shock of it and then the, oh, my God, what are we going to do with a blind baby? After they got through all that stuff, I think they handled it pretty well. I remember when I was 4 years old, a social worker from the School for the Blind, Miss Minturn, came to visit us. And I was making a big racket playing with pots and pans or something on the kitchen floor. And she said, well, why are you letting her do all that? She needs to behave. And I guess that was a rude awakening for my parents, that I needed to be treated or I needed to follow the same rules as any well-behaved child. But they must have done okay with it because when I was about four, I guess, they had me and my parents go to visit another couple who had a blind baby. You remember Holly Hunt, Holly Turry?
Yeah,
We went over to visit them, and she was about 6 months old, and I guess the parents had a nice talk. And I looked up at my mother, and I said, "Mommy, this baby's feet stink." And so Holly and I talk about that every so often. My God, this baby's feet stink. So.
Okay, that's the music. That's our music. That indicates our break, and that's when Reverend Ray has to go in his pocket to pay somebody something. So, Jay, we will be come back on the other side of our break, and our very special guest is Jane Corona. And she's going to tell us more about the exciting things she learned about being a baby and coming up as a blind person on the other side. Miss Renee.
You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. And we're located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information that we share is for dog guide users everywhere. Back to our host and our special guest, Reverend Radio Razor and Jane Corona.
All right. Now, Jane, so you went to school, Maryland School for the Blind, over on Bledsoe's side. You started out on the young side and then moved over to a newcomer and all of that?
I did. The Bledsoe side was for the little kids, and I started
mm-hmm.
there when I was in kindergarten. And then actually there were four of us who skipped fourth grade, and we went over to the newcomer side. I went home and told my parents I skipped fourth grade, and they didn't believe me. So I had a really good experience there at the School for the Blind. A lot of people didn't have such a good experience with their School for the Blind experiences, but I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of friends there, and of course, all of our books were available in Braille. We didn't have to worry about trying to find someone to read things to us, and we had Braille writers and all the equipment that we needed to be equal, so I had a good time there.
No, I did too, Jane. I have to say I had a good time there. And also, and a lot of people say, well, how y'all blind people get around with canes and hitting and stuff? And I didn't even think about it at the time, but we was taught how to just mental map and get our way around.
We didn't actually start cane travel until ninth grade. We didn't think anything of it, walking around the building with no cane. I did fall down the stairs one day. In newcomer hall, I wasn't paying attention or something, and I remember falling down the stairs, and the first thing I thought was, my God, did anybody see me make a fool of myself? So, I had my priorities straight.
You know, you talk a little bit about your parents' reaction to your being blind. I know siblings sometimes can be both a boon and a bane to us. How did your older brother, and I know we're 9 years difference in age, how did he explain or accept your blindness?
I don't remember him ever doing anything about it at all when we were growing up. Of course, there was the age difference, and I never really played that much of a part in his life, I don't think, until we were adults. I don't Of course, I was away all week at school, so our lives were completely different, and I don't really think I made that much of an impact on his life, except when now that we're adults, we're a lot closer.
I had a special needs brother. He was older. He was the older brother. We're all 2 years apart. And my younger brother and I now sort of compare notes. I think we intuitively protected him, but we didn't know the word special needs, and we just put him in situations where he would be successful, you know. So I'm always interested in how siblings, respond to a sibling that has it. Let's move on to your guide dog. What motivated you to get a guide dog?
Before, Wait a minute, Miss Renee, before you move on to that, let me ask Jane this, because I'm always interested. Now, there was like three sets, it was three situations for the blind kids. One, there was kids that came there and never left Maryland School for the Blind other than major holidays like Christmas or whatever in the summer. And then there was kids that came there and they went home every week. And then they came there and they went home every day. Now when did you fall? Did you go home every week?
I went home every weekend. We went back to school on Sunday afternoons, and we went home on Friday afternoons.
That
was the one bad thing about the School for the Blind experience. I really didn't have any friends at home.
I had
one friend who I met during catechism classes, and she would come over to my house, and we would visit. And then my godmother, she had some grandchildren, and they were good friends of mine through my growing up years. But I really didn't have that many friends at home, so I was just as happy to go back to the school where all my friends were.
So let me ask you this, and then we'll get to the dialogue. So when you finally graduated from Maryland School for the Blind and got out in the so-called able-bodied world, socially, how did you feel you was prepared coming from Maryland School for the Blind, going to a sighted world and had to socially interact with people?
Well, they tried to prepare us for that, because those of us who were headed off to college went to public high school for three classes a day in 11th and 12th grades. And we tried so hard to fit in with those sighted kids.
Let me clarify
what,
that.
What?
Ms. Renee, the smart kids went to Parkville.
Yeah, the smart kids.
Bob, I want you to think people like Bob Lewis, Willie Mincy. No, not us. Me, no. So go ahead there, Jay, because I want to.
You remember
ask you
now,
about
I skipped fourth grade. So I had to hold up that tradition. See.
You girl, the gates of y'all people on the stoop and everything. Okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped socialize you then.
That helped. And then I wish I could go back and relive my college years. I really do, because I would have done them a lot differently now than I did then. I don't think I was mature enough.
How so?
I don't. The blind school environment was so sheltered, because we were all the same.
Yes.
You know, we were equal, and everything. And I don't think I was prepared as much as I needed to be for the social situations. You know, I mean, all 4 years of college, I didn't have one single date. You know.
You're a pretty woman.
Well, I know that, but I was also really shy. I would have handled it a lot differently. I'm a lot different person now than I was then. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to go back. I have this dream that I haven't finished all my college work, and they told me I really didn't get that diploma, and I need to go back for one more semester. So,
well, Jane, if you go back, I want to go back.
Just think of all the equipment they've got now. I mean, I had a typewriter and a tape recorder. Now they've got computers and scanners and printers, and I'm typing papers on a typewriter, and the damn thing was on stencil, and the instructor couldn't read the paper. So that was a bad day.
That's funny. I was just wondering how did that from going to a shelter-based environment and being on an equal footing with most of the blind people and you being a few cuts above, and then going out into the so-called real world, how you dealt with that. Ms. Renee, any questions before we have to go?
No, but if Jane gets to go back, I want to go back too.
Okay, let's go back together.
More confident.
Where are we going? We're going back to Salisbury University?
No, we're going to go to my college. We're going to go to Baldwin Wallace, and we're going to do a different venue because we need a fresh start. So we're going to go.
Okay,
to
well, I'm scared to go over
Cleveland.
The Bay Bridge anyway. So.
Oh, it's not Bay Bridge. So you're cool. You're cool. And anyway,
okay, I don't want to go back to Salisbury because I'm scared to go over the Bay Bridge.
Oh, okay. So yeah,
we're
going to try something totally different. But
okay.
I think that you said that's so important, especially for girls and women who are sheltered. Even though I didn't have a physical disability, I was very sheltered. And when I went there, and all these kids were smoking and playing cards and skipping classes, and it's like, what?
I was very disillusioned. One day I was walking past the payphone, and all sorts of money came down. And I took it to everybody in the lounge, and I said, we've got to find out who this money belongs to. And they said,
goodness.
Oh, no, we'll take it and buy cigarettes with it. And I was shocked.
Yeah,
and I really was.
So, Jane,
when people ask me about my card-playing prowess, I always tell them I learned in college. But anyway,
let's get
to guide dogs.
Before we get to guide dogs, let me ask
you
this.
Get a guide dog?
Renee, before she gets the guide dogs, let me ask this. Jane, what role models?
Can you tell this is a married couple of people?
Yeah, I've been there. Got that T-shirt, do you? Okay, Jane, let me ask you this. What role models were they in Maryland School for the Blind and to set you on a course to, you know, to have a career or choose a career, or how or did you pre-choose a career of what you want to do in life?
I think the first role model that I ever had at School for the Blind was, her name was Chris Baugh. And I remember when I came there the first day, and one of the teachers was showing me around, me and my parents, and she had this really young, wonderful voice. And I said, how old are you? And she said, over 21. And that was Chris Baugh. And she was our class advisor when we were seniors. She was, you know, with us all through the years. And she was just delightful. She really, I got in touch with her again a few weeks ago in preparation for our state convention. And she's just as delightful and wise and insightful as she was then. So I think she was probably my first and greatest role model there at the School for the Blind. But as for a career, I fell into it because, I mean, my mother's whole family worked for the VA. So naturally I went and got a job in the typing pool at the VA and moved up from there into various better high-paying jobs at the VA, but I wasn't real happy there. When a job came open at the Library of Congress, I had an English degree in college, so I finally got a chance to utilize my degree to some extent. So the last 10 years of my working life were my real career. I really enjoyed my job there.
So were
you
over there with Freddie Pico and the people?
I was, yes.
Okay. Wow, isn't that something?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right, Ms. Renee, so we're going to talk about having a dog.
Okay.
Having a dog. I mean, this is Tag Do, your dog, and you.
Yeah, I figured we would talk at some point about guide dogs. And since my dog is curled up here on the couch beside me, we won't tell the seeing eye that my dog is on the couch.
No, we will not.
And what number dog is that for you? And that's
this is
number
dog number
you.
Six.
Okay, I'm on seven. Wow.
When I got my own place in 1978, and I figured it was time to get more independence because even though I had studied cane travel since ninth grade, I was a terrible cane traveler. The only reason I got the certificate for completing the cane travel course is because my instructor felt sorry for me. She told me that, and I believe it. So, but having a guide dog, I'm much better. So I went.
Your instructor wasn't Miss Lou, was it?
No, Miss McGraw.
Oh, that's what you had. Oh,
I had Miss McGraw. Lord of mercy.
I know. We're going to come back on the other side with our special guest, Jane Corona, to actually talk about what made her decide to get a dog. And I didn't realize it was that long before you got one. But anyway, so we're going to come back on the other side.
Okay.
We're going to bump out. Then we're going to bump back in with our announcer, Ms. Renee.
Well, we want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium food. If your dog needs it, more than likely, they have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV. So give them a call at 202-747-3434. That's 202-747-3434. And back over to Reverend Ray and our special guest, Jane Corona.
All right, before we get to our special guest, you know, this is the segment that we do Charlie C. From the DMV. And Charlie, usually we call it Charlie's Corner, and it is sponsored by the National Capital Area Chapter, and that chapter is in Silver Springs. The president is Mr. Pat Sheehan. They meet every third Thursday at 7 o'clock. You can go on our website, CAGDO About Your Dog and You, and get the information that we put up. And we usually meet there, and that's at the Sheraton Park Hotel. And that was really nice. We went there around 6, and we had a little dinner and stuff, and then we have a speaker and everybody there with the dogs and stuff. And then after the meal, people go to the bar, and then after that, we can't talk about it no more. So anyway, we hope one day to be able to get back to that venue again and meet in person. But anyway, that they sponsor Charlie's Corner, which our brother Charlie's no longer with us, but we still honor that they sponsor that. And you can also go on the website, CAGDO About Your Dog and You, and just tab down and come to the National Capital Area. And we're trying to get the president to send us a picture and some contact information, Mr. Pat Sheehan, so we can put a page up to keep you aware of the activities of that chapter in Silver Springs. ACC.
We're not real sophisticated when it comes to websites, though. So.
Well, anyway, so we're going to beat on him until we can get that done. So anyway, and that's a Charlie's Corner, and we always say Charlie C. That bring information about us and the D to the DMV. So, all right. So now, Ms. Renee, give us another formal introduction to our special guest.
I would be delighted if we finished the class reunion. We're in this half. We're going to get our guest, Jane Corona, to answer the question, what is the Braille Revival League, and do you need to be a superhero to join?
No, you don't. Actually, it's the cheapest dues of any of the affiliates of the American Council of the Blind. I've been trying to get them to raise their dues for years now. I'm the treasurer, so I want more money. The Braille Revival League is an organization that's affiliated with the American Council of the Blind, and it promotes the use of Braille because now with all of the audio equipment and the computers and all that stuff, people have the misconception that Braille is dead. You don't need Braille anymore. But without Braille, I couldn't function. Writing a note to yourself or notes for a speech or labeling a bottle of medication or a can of food or anything. Braille is so important, and we work to promote that so people know that Braille is not dead. We have an award-winning magazine, and we're a membership organization. So anybody who's interested in Braille is welcomed as a member. So that's,
you know, the fight,
that's what we try to do.
The fight that you're talking about sort of reminds me of the fight that's going on in education now. People feel that children do not need to learn to write cursive because they have all these devices. But it's comparable to what you're saying about the Braille. These are fundamentals, and you really do need to have them. I do want to talk a lot about the Braille and the new type of contractions that are coming out. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Actually, the contractions are the same. The new thing that's come out now is United English Braille, UEB, and they've made Braille standardized throughout the world, and they basically made it easier for sighted people, and they made Braille more equivalent to print in that, you know, you can see the bullets and the bold and the underline and all that stuff. Of course, we didn't come up with that, so I can't officially say this because I have to spout the party line here because the Braille Revival League is in favor of UEB. But I personally, the first thing I do when I get a Braille display or something, I turn it off because I don't like it. I don't care about the bullets and the underline and the bold and the, all that stuff. So I don't like it. So let me ask you a question
about a person learning Braille that is new to Braille. This would not be something unfamiliar to them. So would United
if you see a document in UEB, you can read it. It's just
gotcha.
When you come to a contraction that's written differently, it's sort of a shock to your fingers.
So it's almost like learning another language. You have to stop and think about it.
Yeah.
But it's not completely new.
You can still read it.
Right.
But it's just the principle of the thing. I don't like changes. So I just don't.
And with the Braille embossers, and I guess like Jane, my office bought me a 360 Romeo embosser.
Cool.
And then somebody called and said, well, Reverend Ray, I want you to Braille something out for me, but I don't want it in, the standard Braille. They want it in this other kind of Braille. Because I think you've got, three or four different kind of ways you can Braille or something? If you use Duxbury,
which is grade 2 Braille translation program, you can set it whether you want it in UEB or not.
Let me tell you what to do. Let me give you Jane Corona's number.
Okay. And then there's a technical support guy at Duxbury named Don Breda, and I'll just call him. You know, I just know enough to be dangerous. So I call my friend Don Breda, and I say, how do you do this and that? You know. So.
Oh, okay. Because they came around to my office, and they saw this big, beautiful machine. And they said, Razor. We're going to need to get some, Braille stuff done for different groups and stuff. I say,
Yeah.
Let me get back real quick about the dog. What made you, you was out of school how many years before you decided to get a dog?
I graduated in 72. I graduated from college in 76. I wish I'd had a dog when I was in college.
That's what I was going to ask you.
After I went out into the work world and stuff, and I, being the terrible cane traveler that I am, I figured it was probably a wise thing to do to go get a dog. And I got my first dog from a school in Michigan, and I chose that school because I have a friend who went there. And that's not the reason to choose a guide dog school, let me tell you. I decided when that dog retired to go to the Seeing Eye, which was a very, very positive experience for the rest of my five dogs.
Oh, okay.
Now, was the training very different from your first dog to your fifth dog?
Yeah, I think so. The dogs are getting a lot softer now.
Yes,
I know. My first dog, she was a very opinionated dog. One day I corrected her in public for picking up something on the floor, and she wouldn't talk to me for 3 days. And I begged her, please, Kaya, just talk to me. I'll never correct you again, please. You know, so they're a lot softer nowadays, I think. But
really, that's funny.
Yeah.
So now, what kind of breed of dogs has that changed for you from the first seeing eye dog to your current dog?
My first dog was a black Labrador. My second dog was a German Shepherd, and I loved her dearly. She was a cute, beautiful little dog. But Shepherds are a bit mouthy. They're a little bit, most of them are a little bit noisy and growly and barky and stuff. And after that, I told them I do not ever want a German Shepherd. So they fixed my wagon. They gave me a flat-coated retriever. Flat coats sing like Chewbacca. They are very opinionated, very vivid. And after that, I said, do not give me any more flat coats. So after that, they've given me Labradors. I'm a Labrador person. I have had two yellow Labradors after that, and now I have a black Labrador. So,
I want to jump ahead a little bit. Because I can see we're not going to get everything in. You're going to have to come back. But you talked about your ideal job at the Library of Congress. And I want to ask you what lessons that your work life taught you. You said it was your ideal job. So what lessons your work life taught you? And do you have any favorite stories from your work life that you can share on the radio, public?
Well, I was unhappy with my job at the VA, and a job came up at the Library of Congress at the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. Well, now it's print disabled, as a quality assurance specialist in the we called it NLS, National Library Service. They oversaw the production of the talking books and the Braille books. And so I was in a soundproof booth all day listening to 10% of each book and making sure that the book was correct and making sure that I didn't find any errors in it. And it was fascinating. I really liked my colleagues. I loved my job. I loved to read. I love computers. What's not to like about that job? So I was there for 10 years. So
tell me a little bit about talking books for people who may not be familiar with it, and how your quality control helped, you know, ensure that people get what they order, and the impact that it has had on blind, low vision, and now print disabled readers.
Yeah. Back in the 1931 or so, the program at the Library of Congress was formed to provide books on records for blind people so that they could read. They started with the Bible and stuff like that, and then they gradually went out into other books, and then they were recorded on great big records, and the Library of Congress provided record players to play them, and then they gradually got smaller records and recorded them at a slower speed so that you could fit more on them. And then but when you would get one of those big books, I got War and Peace one day, and it was in two huge containers. I strapped that book back up, and I sent it right back. It was too big for me. So in the 1970s, they started cassettes, and books were on cassette. And that was great. It was smaller, you know, it took up less space. But you'd get a book from the library, and one of the – you'd just got to a really good part and you put the next cassette in, the cassette's broken. And that was not fun. So after that, they decided to digitize all of them, and that's when I came into the Library of Congress. I worked a lot on digitizing the old cassette books so that they could be put up on a website and blind people could download them. Of course, they don't take up a lot of room that way. You just download them to your computer. And then they provided digital players free to blind people so that we could listen to the talking books. And also at the same time, they were producing books in Braille. And those big hard copy Braille books were huge. So that was a pain to have to get them back to the post office. So they decided to digitize those too. And now their new pilot project is they've developed a reader that you can read the Braille books on. And the little thing, it's so small, you pick it up and you smile. It's so cute. It's about the size of a paperback novel, and it has a 20-cell Braille display. And I have 4,000 books on mine, so that's amazing.
Wow.
I do. Wow. I took it with me to the doctor's office this morning, and I'm waiting for them to take me, and I pulled out my little reader, and I'm reading my book. So, I hear the music again.
Y'all get trained real quick. Thank you.
It doesn't take long to train me.
But I should have got on that pilot program, Jane, because a number of people.
You can do that. You get books from Baltimore?
You can call
the library in Baltimore.
Okay. I need to because I have so many people to ask me about that.
I'm going to let people know that they're listening to CAGDU about your dog and you. CAGDU is the capital area dog guide users located in the nation's capital. We're back to our very special guest, Jane Corona, and our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor.
Thank you, Mr. Yeah, and I do need to get that because somebody in my position, I at least should know about these things. They'd be like, Reverend Ray, you don't have that. And you, I said, no, okay, I'll do something about that.
Free. You have to fill out surveys every 2, 4, and 6 months because it's a pilot. They want to know which of the readers they're going to choose. They have two of them. And so, you ought to get it. It's a cute little machine.
I read a book a week, I think.
That's good.
See,
then you need one of these readers. You need to call the library in Baltimore.
I'd love to read.
How do you find out about how to get into the pilot program? I mean, do you call the library in Baltimore, the regional library?
Yeah, actually, I didn't. But they've chosen. They had four libraries that were chosen to evaluate one of these readers. And Maryland wasn't going to be one of them, but New Jersey wasn't quite ready. So they put Maryland in, and I didn't find out until I went on a podcast about the new e-reader project, and I found out that Maryland was one of them. And I'm jumping around the house, and, oh, boy, I want one right now. So I called the library, and I bugged the director to death until he put me on the list. So I got it. So.
Well, let me ask you something, since you're involved in both this program and you worked at the Library of Congress for a really long time for 10 years as a quality assurance person. What change does listening to books for a blind, low vision, or print disabled person make in their lives? Have you had any experience or feedback from people who talk about what that meant to them?
Not really. I know it's so much a part of our daily lives, listening to talking books. I used to, when I was a child, listen to talking books like all night long, and my father would turn that machine off and go to bed. I know that I like to multitask, so I can't just sit and listen to a book, but it gives me the opportunity to do other things. So a couple of years ago, I decided to learn how to knit because if I'm sitting listening to a talking book, then I'm lying down listening to a talking book, and then I'm asleep and the talking book is going on by itself. So you lose your place. So I figured if I learned how to knit, then I would stay awake and I could listen to my book and I could multitask and get something constructive done. And it's worked out really well. So the good thing about having all these hundreds of thousands of talking books, I have access to all of these books that have been recorded for us since like the 60s and 70s. And it's really difficult when I'm in a book club. I'll suggest a book that I have access to, but they don't, at least sighted people. They want to read the most current books, and they don't have access to all of these books like I do, and I feel sorry for them, you know.
Yeah. So. I think we are richer from reading literature. I was talking to my granddaughter last night, and she was complaining about having to study poetry. And I said, when you get older, you will appreciate it so much more. But books and reading and that kind of thing, I think it's just so vital. And now
I don't know what I would do without books. I have a T-shirt that says, what does it say? You can't buy happiness, but you can buy books, and that's about the same thing. Something like that. And then I have a T-shirt from the Library of Congress. It's a picture of Thomas Jefferson's library, and it says, I cannot live without books.
Yes.
And those
absolutely.
Are my two favorite T-shirts.
Yes. No, and I understand that. But and I think it's so great. I watch Reverend Ray get totally absorbed in his books. He closes the door, and I know he's in a whole nother world.
Oh, absolutely.
So I don't even go in there. Two quick things, because we're almost out of time, and there were just so many things we wanted to ask you. I know that the ACB, the American Council, just wrapped up their annual conference on Zoom. It was very well done, by the way.
Oh, that was wonderful. I was terrified.
I just want to ask you, what were the takeaways that the conference yielded for you and for the other people who helped plan it?
I guess the fact that we could do it. We were terrified. It was going to be streamed all over the country on ACB radio, and we didn't know how to do it. But they helped us every step of the way, and I guess it gave us the confidence to know that, hey, we're going to do it again next year. I think the thing that really helped us was the planning ahead. One of our presenters was supposed to go for an hour, and she only went for a half an hour. So we had planned for that, and we had another presenter lined up just in case we need you. And we did. So it was seamless, and no one even knew that was a fill-in. And so and people are still talking about how wonderful that convention was. And it was fun.
Well, just the bits that I saw, it was that the ACB in the future will always be a hybrid of both actual meeting and purpose in person and some Zoom meetings.
I think we can never go back now. With Zoom, you have such greater opportunities to have presenters from all over the country, attendees from all over the country. We have three new members in the National Capital Area chapter of ACB of Maryland. Two are from Frederick and one is from Salisbury. They could have never joined us if we had in-person meetings. And I think we'll definitely keep a Zoom component. Some people like, you know, in-person meetings. I find in-person conventions very lonely places, because if you're with somebody or whatever, you can have dinner with them and stuff. But if you're by yourself, you don't have that. And I guess inside I'm still basically the shy person I was in college. I hide it a lot better now. But but I think Zoom is great, because you can go in the kitchen and have a cup of coffee and cookies, and you can take your dog outside. You don't have to worry about where is the dog relief area. You know, where is my next meeting? So I'll do Zoom any day.
Well, listen, that was a perfect segue into this show is called CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. And paying homage to that title, we want to finish up about the Canine Aquatic Center.
Oh.
Can you tell us about that?
Well, I really thought that my dog would like it. He's a Labrador, right?
Well, tell us what it is.
I went over there, and Wednesday's half price day, and we go in there.
Well, tell us what it is first. Jane,
oh, the Canine Aquatic Center
is
in Potomac.
Yes.
Okay. And it is they have a series of pools, and dogs can go in and go and swim. They're supervised. Someone from the staff goes in with the dog. They don't let you go in with your dog because you know, dogs can, you know, scratch and you know, it can be harmful if you're not prepared for it. They put a life jacket on the dog and their dog toys in there, and you get a half an hour. The dog gets a half an hour to go and play. So I took my dog there, and he wasn't real happy. So next time I'm going to take one of his friends. So I have a friend who has a black lab guide dog, and her dog loved it. And so, but my dog still was sort of iffy. And then a friend of mine had a doggy birthday party there. There were 6 guide dogs, and I went, okay, well, maybe he'll like it this time. No. He said, Mom, what don't you understand? I don't like swimming. So, you know, I have never taken him back, and I never will. He just doesn't
and
like it.
Let me ask you a question. Isn't your
Pardon?
Dog named Sailor?
Yes.
Like Sailor on
Sailor
the water?
Sailor like on a ship. I guess he doesn't know what his name is. You know, no. He's not like swimming. Yeah, he is. I thought about changing his. Actually, my last dog, his name was Seymour. And I'm Jane. Jane and Seymour? No. And he sees more because I see less. I said, no. We're going to change this dog's name. If Morris Frank can change his dog's name from Kiss to Buddy, I can change my dog's name from Seymour to Nugget. And so I thought about changing Sailor's name, but no, it's okay. Uh-oh, there's the music again. I'm well-trained.
Sailor, you had for how long now?
3 years. 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years. Okay, because I remember how did you, hurt your foot, break your foot or something?
No, I broke my arm. I was running down South Street in Morristown, New Jersey. Pride goeth before a fall, you know. I tripped over my foot and fell flat down and broke my arm. I had to go home and heal, and they held my dog for me.
Right, he went back
that was nice.
Yeah.
Well, Jane, thank you very much for being a. We always say with 3 things we'd like to make sure our guests get on the show, and our guests and our audience get on the show: information, inspiration, and entertaining. I think we have fulfilled those 3. those 3 things. And if me and Miss Renee cut up, can you imagine Charlie Crawford added to this every week?
I wish Charlie was here with us.
I get to imagine what that bit like. But thank you so much, Jane, and we really appreciate
Thank you
and,
both very much. I've enjoyed
you're
it.
You're welcome.
Thank
you're
you.
Welcome. All right,
thank
God
you.
Bless you. Thank you.
Okay.
All
have amazing. A great day.
Okay.
Thank
okay.
you, too.
We'll just,
thanks.
We'll miss Renee. Another fine show. Thank you, our listener audience. I'm Reverend Ray. Well, our time is up. I thank you for your time. Until the next time, Reverend Ray, and I'd like to say what me and Mr. Charlie, you've been listening to CAG do about your dog and you. And Mr. Renee will tell you how you can hear this show. And what me and Mr. Charlie always say is that hug your honey, but pet your pooch. God bless and be blessed.
You have been listening to CAGDU about your dog and you, Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and we're located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a question or a show idea? Give us a call or send us an email. Our email is cagdu2020@gmail.com. That's cagdu2020@gmail.com. Or give us a call at 301-263-7371. 301-263-7371. We want to thank our guest, Jane Corona, for giving us a lot of information entertaining us, and we'll see you here next week with next week's guest.